he's getting clobbered by cobblers.
All right, everyone, warm up those brains. It's time for the Get More Smarter podcast. This is episode 172. I'm Jason Bain.
I'm Ian Silveri. This week on the Get More Smarter podcast, it's the Bobert Buck body armor episode. Jason Bain's powers of psychic prognostication reign as KenSNBC makes it official. He's not running for re-election in 2024. So remember, folks, if you want to know what the future holds in Colorado politics, you gotta get more smarter. But first, Marshall Zellinger, politics guy for 9 News, joins us to talk about the mosh pit that's already forming to replace CNN, Ken, and he does it all while getting his oil changed. Take a listen. It is now my great pleasure to introduce Marshall Zellinger, like a tiger, from 9 News, the politics guy. He's a reporter and anchor for 9 News in Denver and Next with Kyle Clark. His official title is politics guy, a native of Aurora and a graduate of the University of Colorado. Go Buffs. Marshall began his career in Chico, California, before moving to KRDO in Colorado Springs from 2004 to 2010, which is also important for this conversation. He came back to Denver in 2010 to work for Channel 7, which is where I met you. After 7 years at Channel 7, Marshall moved to 9 News in 2017. And if you're doing the math, that means January will be his 7th year at the NBC affiliate 9 News. Marshall has been one of the top political reporters in Colorado for more than a decade. He has won 9 Emmy Awards and 2 National Walter Cronkite Awards for excellence in political and investigative reporting. Marshall, thanks for coming on the Get More Smarter podcast. Good to see you.
Sure. I didn't realize I was going to get the full bio. Now, do I go full conceited mode and say that's an outdated bio?
How many more Cronkite Awards have you won since then?
There's 3 total.
Do you have a few more daytime Emmys at the same time? Or
daytime? Yeah, there are people who have close to like 100 of these. And so for me to be like, I don't know if it's 16 or 17 now, it sounds conceited for sure. But there are people who are well much more honored than I am that would have a really hard time memorizing how many they have. But it's 16 or 17, I think.
You may be one of our most awarded guests then. So thanks for spending time with us on the way to an oil change.
On my way to an oil change that they don't care how many awards that is. It's the price is. Give me the money.
So we're here to talk about CD4, the 4th Congressional District, district we refer to with our 7th favorite member of Congress from Colorado, What the Buck.
What the Buck?
Ken Buck won that district 60% to 36% in 2022. So this is the safest Republican district in the state. No Democrat ever came within 20 points of Ken Buck. The 2024 election cycle was looking pretty boring for a while, with no statewide election except for president. We're all pretty sure which way Colorado is going to go in that race. But Ken Buck's decision to not seek re-election, which Jason predicted in early August, to his credit, makes things much more interesting. What was your immediate reaction to Ken Buck's announcement that he wouldn't be running again?
I was at a story shoot about this Aurora / Adams County ballot box that was damaged in a construction accident. And I was just finishing with the clerk, Josh Zeigelbaum, and I got a text that said, that was like already my 3rd story of the day at 11 o'clock in the morning. And I got a text from my producer and she's like, do you want to switch to this Buck thing? Otherwise I can handle it. And I look up at Zeigelbaum, a photographer I was with, and the election director. I'm like, I have no idea what this text is about, but I'm assuming Buck's just announced he's not running for re-election. So I quickly open up my email and I saw it. So I'm not surprised. With all the appearances on different cable news networks, and not just the cable news network, I had a feeling he was leaning toward probably not running and trying his hand at commentating, but I also wouldn't have been surprised for him just to announce re-election in a district that likely was safe, but maybe he would suddenly face a primary with his recent, decisions. But my level of surprise, not high.
We have taken to calling him Ken SNBC on this podcast, which I think fits well.
CNN Ken.
Yeah, it writes itself.
Before we get into the fun stuff about the horse race, does Buck have a legacy of anything? I mean, well, what will we remember about him to the extent that anyone will?
The most recent, I assume, is what people would stick with is whatever his position is at the end on elections. I'm not trying to be facetious, only because like this week we have seen Ken Buck on both sides of election denialism in the last 2 weeks when he makes in his video statement. That's one of the main reasons he's leaving Congress after having voted for a speaker who's key in election denialism, after having not voted for a speaker who is key in election denialism, and then testifying this week in the Trump trial to keep him off the ballot in defense of the most main election denial list there is. So this is tough because I'm more into state politics than I am DC. But when stuff like this happens, I get immersed in the DC stuff. So in terms of policy and decisions, I know Kyle Clark's more in tune on that
than I am. And in his intros to my story made it clear about what you should remember about Ken Buck and his decisions that seem to sway in the moment.
Yeah, I think that's totally fair. I if you ask me what his position is on election denialism, I don't know. It depends on the day.
It's interesting that there's so much that has come by that you tend to forget that he had signed on to the Texas, what was it? I'm even drawing a blank. The electoral, like of the electors.
Right.
Yeah. That was his first, you know, foray into this was on that side of, wait, maybe this isn't on the up and up. And now he's appearing at times full stop on, no, this is nonsense. We need to stop saying it was a stolen election and just move and be policymakers. But then it's kind of going back and forth. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about the horse race. You made a lot of phone calls to potential candidates right away. Did you get the sense from the people you were talking to that they were surprised, or did they pretty much expect it?
Some of them were surprised, for sure. I broke the news to George Brockler, so he said. I'm going to jump to an interesting story about, he told me he was on his way to officiate a wedding out of state, told me, I broke the news to him. And then a few phone calls later, when I called Jerry Sonnenberg, he said he didn't talk to Buck, but he had gotten a few minutes heads up that morning. And so, you know, you think Brockler is probably well involved and in tune with a former DA and maybe would get a heads up on that. And Sonnenberg telling me that he got a heads up, but not from Buck, suggests to me that maybe the key players that want to help select the next representative might have given him a heads up. And what does that say if Sonnenberg got the heads up but Brockler didn't? Unless Brockler was just not telling me the full truth about it. Who knows?
Or what if Brockler gave Sonnenberg the heads up?
You know, he's a very personable person. And I believed him. And maybe he was. It was nice because then I could say I was the person that broke the news to Brockler, who is probably, if he jumps in, going to be one of the key high top possible representative or candidates. Why lie about something like that? Like, I don't know. I take him for his word that he didn't know until I told him. And I was telling him, like, I don't know, 45 minutes after the news came out, maybe not even that long.
What other conversations stood out to you? Did any of them more than others?
Sonnenberg laughed when I called. Yeah, I was trying to be, I was trying to keep it light. So I call and say, hello, future congressperson of Colorado. And, you know, it gets a big chuckle and gets him, you know, okay, I'll talk to this guy. He's cool.
Right.
So, you know, the honesty there, I think it's pretty clear. He's gonna be in.
Right.
He didn't say that. You know, I had to talk with his family about it. State Rep Richard Holtorf telling me that he's going to have an emergency meeting of his exploratory committee. I'll read between the lines, and I put this in my web story and on TV where I slotted them, you know, the considering the no and the question mark. Holtorf, my impression was he's probably going to be in. Laura Thomas asked me some questions, you know, like, what do you think?
Will you vote for me?
But I like the way she, you know, she's put up with a lot in Douglas County. And so it's probably like, for her, it might be refreshing to try something to get out of that. Again, not a yes, but I got the impression from the phone call. Don't like, I'm not going to be surprised if she says yes. Let me think through this. Christy Burton Brown, that was refreshing because, you know, Nine News relationship with the former party chair can be contentious a little bit, but she spoke openly with me and kept saying highly unlikely to run and then highly likely to run for CD4 Board of Education. But just like telling me that you're like, there's no question now. It's like, okay, you're not going to be in this race. You're going to go for that. And so I was appreciative of someone who was actually willing to just give me more than she needed to. And my first phone call was Steve Reams. And he could not have said no fast enough when I got him on the phone. So that was nice. I'm not going to BS this guy. Nope.
All right. So you've talked to a bunch of potential candidates, politicians, activists, and all that. There were a few sort of unknown names already in the race before you talked to these folks this week. Justin Schreiber and Trent Lisey, one of whom wears a ridiculous hat that says MAGA King on it. But Deborah Flora, who ran in the U.S. Senate race in 2022 and was not the nominee, was first of the sort of slightly more known names to make it official. Did you get a chance to talk to her? Did you get a sense of her thoughts here?
No, I texted, I called her, and then it went to voicemail, and I texted her, and then I'm giving you my day also. I was going from the Adams County clerk's office to the governor's budget news conference, and as I'm walking into the budget news conference, she texts me that she's getting ready for her radio show, and she'll have an announcement tomorrow, which was Thursday. And then I tried listening to her radio show while working on my story, and I missed the part where she said it was her last radio show, which would have given it away. But through the people I had talked with, there was really no doubt that she was going to be in. I talked to more people than the people I talked with thought I even realized themselves. And I thought, I have no idea. I've got like 3, 4, 5, 6 people to call. And then I'm kind of like grasping. And then someone suggested someone else and suggested someone else. And I ended up with 15 people. But yeah, she was someone I didn't talk with, but I got that text. But I was really confident that she was going to announce.
A lot can still change, but like if we were going to ask you to place a bet or something right now, how many candidates do you think will be on the primary ballot in June?
I thought, so my graphic showed 7 considering 2 that are in, I didn't include them in the graphic. So that's 9. I didn't hear back from Heidi Ganahl. I didn't hear back from Mike Lynch. Somebody recommended Mike Lynch. I had never really heard his name involved. So I don't know if that's a serious person or not, but I haven't heard back from either of them. I thought a handful, someone texted me and thought 12 to 15.
Kyle
guessed closer to 20. I just don't know.
I mean, at some point, you have to get signatures and go through caucus. Like, there is an upper limit on the number of names on the ballot, just practically.
Well, I had this conversation with one of the candidates about, do you go through the effort knowing... I use the Denver mayor's race as an example. Like, someone's going to win. Like, there's going to be a Mike Johnston that comes out on top. But if you're one of the other candidates that seems in contention, and then all you like Leslie Harrod announced she was running for Denver mayor, like, or didn't announce, but you like for a year and a half you kind of knew she was running for Denver mayor, and knowing that in the background, I'm like, man, she's gonna be a front runner, and then suddenly everybody else and their mother gets into the race and you see her fall back, and it's like, do you put yourself through that? And maybe internally knowing you're not going to be any better than 3rd or 4th, but also, and this will get to our conversation about CD5 in 2006, I look back at the math. In 2006, when Doug Lamborn won the primary, he got 30,000 votes and won by 1,700. So take like 30,000 people decided who was going to be that.
Right.
So if you take that mindset into CD4, it's like, okay, if there's 12 of us, maybe I only need 14,000 friends to vote for me, and that'll be enough.
No, this is a total crapshoot, and like it is the one opportunity for a decade, which I think is, or more, which I think is your Lamborn example, where like you could just kind of trip and fall and accidentally or somehow randomly ish become a member of Congress. So like everyone, this is the safest Republican district in the state. Most of them live here. Some of the people who have announced their interest do not live here. And we'll get into that in a minute. But yeah, it's almost like, why not? Right.
It's a lot of effort, though, to be the one that came out on top. And I mean, that's the decision that you have to make is, am I going to go through all the effort of glad handing through a lot of counties? Because it's a very large state from a state standpoint. It's a large district. So that's the effort. Like, do you go through all that or not?
Well, we've talked about this recently, that the best comparison to what we're going to see is that six-way Republican primary in 2006 in Colorado Springs, which you covered. That was a race to succeed Joel Heffley, who had held that seat for 20 years. What stands out to you when you think back to that race? And there were six people on the ballot who are all people with decent resumes. I mean, they weren't nobodies.
No, I was still a novice in politics at the time, and I knew I was a political reporter, but that was more to come up to Denver from time to time. But I was actually good at doing tough topics and dumbing them down, or simplifying them, I should say. I mean, I know that's a bad thing to say, but I say that to myself. If I don't understand something, it's so complicated. Like, I need to...
No, it's important.
Jeff Crank, what I knew about Jeff Crank was his connection to, like, the party. He was kind of a well-known person, more so than I realized Doug Lamborn was, not knowing Doug Lamborn's history in the state legislature. And then Lionel Rivera, I remember the mayor of Colorado Springs at the time, only because I did my very first real investigation. I was trying to find out the Colorado Springs connection to trying to keep the USOC in Colorado Springs and not lose it to Chicago. And I did an open records request. The United States Olympic Committee. I did an open records request, and the city gave me, it was like one of those classic, here's 3,000 pages, good luck. That's my memory of Lionel Rivera, but then he ran for this seat. So that, I mean, he was well known within Colorado Springs for sure. But I thought, just from my knowledge of who these people were, that Jeff Crank was going to be the one. Like, he was the anointed one, I felt. And so I was kind of surprised on that night.
He came in second. He was close. Do you remember what your sense or your takeaway was in terms of why Lamborn won?
So I was looking at the numbers, and he won by 5,000 votes in Colorado, in El Paso County. I think he had 26,000 to 21,000, if my memory from last night's correct. But so his name recognition in the biggest county that was voting, his time winning elections at the state house. I don't know other than that. I mean, there's and then his support of military. When he went to Congress, he appeared, and I'll say this about Cory Gardner too. When they go to Congress, they suddenly seem different. Like, their Lamborn was personable. Cory Gardner, very personable at the state legislature. And I mean, he's still personable for sure.
Wait, Lamborn was personable?
Yeah, maybe it's because I was a local reporter, and so he would talk with me. Like, he would make time to talk with me. And I remember when he won the primary, I went, maybe it was after he was already elected, I went to his house. And, you know, talked with his wife and then interviewed him in his house. And like that kind of thing, just nope, not anymore. Like, you, like a few years into it, no more. So right. My memory has faded a bit of what made him the commodity, because he's not that person anymore. But he is to the El Paso, to CD5 for sure still. I don't know, because I was heavily support behind Frank. Does anybody remember?
I want to say yes. I don't remember specifically, but that seems right.
Because that'd be interesting here. Is Ken Buck going to go out of his way to say, here are the slate of people I would prefer you to pick, or I think you should pick? Maybe not the one person.
And would that help or hurt?
Well, yeah. I don't know. I definitely, if you want the Trump election denial vote, like what Trent Lisey's doing right now, is going to appeal, I believe, to that. But when you take the entire, because you've got Arapahoe County in there now, you've got Douglas, and I mean, Weld, it depends on the metro area counties that are in CD4. I don't know if that's going to sway all the, maybe Douglas, but the other metro area counties, who knows? But the rural parts of the state and the far eastern plains, that might be the way to get the votes. But if you have enough of those candidates and they split that vote, then that's where we go back to the earlier conversation of it. Maybe everybody and their mother joins this race, because vote splitting would elevate someone who might not normally have a chance on their own. And it might not be someone that the district, in the end, it's a 51% person. Like 51% of the district is okay with this person versus 49% who wanted the extreme on the other side.
Well, or 51% of the people, the Republicans who are going to vote.
Right, right.
Do you remember, I assume the local and state Republican Party stayed out of that primary in 2006, as far as you remember?
Yeah, I don't think the state got involved.
I don't think so either. The reason I ask is because the Colorado Republican Party recently passed a rule change that would allow the party to take sides in a primary, which seems like a really bad idea. But if Dave Williams, the chairman of the state GOP, starts getting involved, I don't know what my question is, but doesn't that seem more dangerous to the party than helpful?
I don't know. I think I have a differing viewpoint than the two of you on this. I think this is not directly going to answer your question immediately, but I always have an issue, and I'll use the attorney general's race for an example from 2016. If
2018.
Thank you. I asked Joe Salazar this in like 2021. He barely lost in the primary to Phil Weiser. So my question to Joe Salazar was, if you thought you were going to be a better attorney general 3 years ago, why aren't you primarying him now and saying, I know I lost, I still think I'm better? And his answer to me was, we have similar viewpoints. I like what he's been doing. There's no reason to like rock the boat. But I know internally, parties are just like, someone wins, do not screw that for us. Let them keep that seat, wait your turn. And I disagree with that. I just don't understand why someone is kind of annoyed. We talk about this being a lifetime seat, whoever wins. Well, why not a primary every 2 years? Like, why Denver DA? Yeah. If Beth McCann wasn't running or was going to run, it would not be as serious of a primary challenge, if any, against. And it's like, why not challenge, even just to say she's doing, or this person's doing a good job, but I think I might be able to do, but nothing against them. And I agree with them with a sure. lot. So that's my long-winded way of saying, like, what's wrong with the party saying, this is kind of the person we think would be better.
Yeah. That's an interesting way to look at it. Yeah. I hadn't thought of it that way, really.
I guess the sort of stated reason is like put the shoe on the other foot, right? So like the state Democratic Party decides there's a, five-way primary for some seat, and the party chair decides they're going to put their thumb on the scale. Well, then the grassroots gets all mad about that. And, so like the dynamics end up being counter to the interests of the party. The party's goal is not necessarily to protect incumbents. It's to win as many seats as possible, or at least one of them, right? So in order to do that, you want to have the least competitions going on at once so you can focus on as many races as possible. So for instance, like look at CD3 as a really good example. Lauren Boebert's the incumbent, but she's quite embattled. Would the state party, they haven't taken her side yet, but the fact that she's facing a real primary from Jeff Hurd at the moment, it does ask an interesting question to Jason's point. Like, why hasn't Dave Williams yet gotten involved protecting Lauren Boebert against the challenge from Jeff Hurd, when Jeff Hurd is clearly like more of a mainstream conservative and Boebert is way more of like a Dave Williams type Republican, right?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think I would, from my standpoint, and I'm not the Politico, I would not think that odd, perhaps, that like, oh, okay, they're a party. And I know there's six people that are coming to the party, but you're going to have a favorite. Or you say, here's why I'm not going to tell you. Here's why we're not going to get involved. But that's not to say we're not always going to get involved. Like, look at what Mike Johnston's doing in the Denver school board race, though he has a history of, his support of kind of like anti-union policy.
Let's say reform candidates.
Sure. We can say that term. He in this race is saying, I'm going to get involved because I think the policy that these people would come up with is the policy that I think needs to be in there. Should he get involved? I bet you there are people that are like, why is he like, let the voters decide. Don't try to sway them. The people that support you will listen to you. So I look at it differently because I do politics, as I say, and I don't know if it's in my bio anymore or not, for people who like watch ESPN and Food Network and the people who do not eat, drink, and sleep politics. And I think the people who eat, drink, and sleep politics are like, party's got to stay neutral. Let everyone else figure it out. You win a race, you're going to have that seat until the term limits tell you you're not going to have that seat unless you do something crazy. And I'm just like, why does it have to be something crazy? It's a job. Why should you automatically, like, maybe I have job reviews. Shouldn't the job review be, we're considering someone else. Tell us again why you're the person.
that should keep that job. I'll say the same thing about president. Should Joe Biden get a free pass without a serious Democratic primary? If not, for the only reason is Democrats don't want to lose the presidency, and he's the guy that people know. Like, I don't know. I just think if someone says, I can do what he does, but I could maybe do it better, and here's how, what is wrong with that?
Give us a final prediction before we let you go. I won't ask you to pick a winner, but how do you think ultimately this plays out in June? Is it a complete shit show for Republicans, or do they the party get through it without too much damage?
I truly don't know. And I think in this conversation, will the party under Dave Williams get involved in suggesting or spending money, if they have money, of who to support? I honestly don't. You know, when I drive to like Elbert County to cover something about Dallas Schroeder at the time, like there were a lot of Trump signs. I haven't been to Elbert County in a while. I haven't been to the Far Eastern Plains in a little bit. Do those still exist? And if they do, then you're going to sway toward the far right extreme candidate. But again, in the Weld County and Adams County, Arapahoe County, the part of the metro areas that are in this CD4, you'll probably have more traditional conservative, moderate thinking Republican voters. So I guess we'll have to see who's in first. And then
I assume my guess would be an extreme one way or the other, that I don't know that you're going to find a moderate that appeals to the majority of CD4.
No, I think that's probably right.
Well, thanks for your analysis, and thanks for hopping on the show so fast, especially in transit on your day off while you're running errands. Marshall Zellinger, politics guy from 9 News. Catch him on Next with Kyle Clark. Go find him on Twitter. Thank you so much for coming on the Get More Smarter podcast and talking about CD4. We are really looking forward to watching you cover this one.
Me too, I think.
It'll be fun.
Lots of truth tests coming my way in a time of year that I don't normally do truth tests.
You're going to have to do a whole 30-minute newscast of truth tests, I think, at some point.
Yeah, and I think like once we have the field set, we'd love to have you back on to kind of talk about the state of the race.
I'll have to compare it to my graphic and see if I was accurate in the considering in the know.
Oh, that's right. We'll do that.
That sounds great.
If anybody went from no to considering, then we got more to talk about.
That's right.
Absolutely. All right. Well, thanks again, Marshall. Take care, man.
See you guys.
Thanks.
Bye.
Before we kick off the rest of the show and tee off on that awesome interview with Marshall, quick reminder, most likely you're listening to this on Monday. If so, tomorrow is election day in Colorado. You have had your ballot for about a month. You have no excuse. Go to govotecolorado.com. Find the nearest drop box. It is way too late to put that thing in the mail right now. It will not count if you don't put it in a drop box by 7 p.m. on election night, which is Tuesday. As of this recording, a mere 654,000 ballots have been cast. That is not a lot.
No, I don't know how that compares. I don't off the top of my head to previous off-years.
I asked somebody who does this sort of thing. He said it's about average, but a little lower. So I don't know, man. You think we're going to crack a million? Probably.
I would think
right?
So. But I mean, there are enough local races that are turning out ballots that I would think so.
We got a mayor's race here in Lakewood. There's a battle going on for the council and the mayor in Aurora. Right now of this recording, though, I mean, you know, Democrats are undervoting Republicans. Republicans are leading. And of course, unaffiliateds have returned the most ballots because they are the most voters in Colorado. Anyway, let's talk about CD4.
Yeah, let's dig in a little more on Ken Buck's announcement, and then we'll get to the bananas primary ahead of us. We've been calling Buck Ken SNBC for his newfound love of cable television. And naturally, Buck announced his decision not to seek re-election on MSNBC.
We got to give Chrissy Powell the props for that particular nickname, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Way to go, Chrissy.
Here is Ken SNBC.
I have decided, Andrea, I'm not going to seek re-election. And
you too.
Yeah,
you too.
I am joining Kay.
I have also decided you shouldn't seek re-election. Future, but,
I've decided that it is time for me to do some other things. I'm always have been disappointed with our inability in Congress to deal with major issues, and I'm also disappointed that the Republican Party continues to, rely on this lie that the 2020 election was stolen, and rely on the January 6th narrative. And the political prisoners from January 6th and other things. If we're going to solve difficult problems, we've got to deal with some very unpleasant truths or lies and make sure that we project to the public what the truth is.
God, that guy's so full of shit.
It's wild stuff, too. I mean, like, you know, in our conversation with Marshall, he reminds us he was like a supporter of the Texas effort to like field another slate of electors, or there was like a lawsuit down there. He voted for Mike Johnson, who not only is like one of the top leading election deniers, but he wrote the amicus brief for the court to try and get the election overturned. Like, there's a level of intellectual inconsistency, some might even say dishonesty, happening here that is like really hard to square with like half of the things this guy has said in public.
Yeah, nothing he says means anything. He will just change his mind or do something that contradicts what he said a few minutes later.
But he's not even like trying to like, you know, mealy mouth it or like get by on a technicality. He is just with the same exact level of conviction saying the exact opposite thing he said several days ago. Right.
Well, remember, he acknowledged in an interview with the New York Post in August that he was actively looking to become a talking head on cable television.
Well, that's at least something he's been consistent about.
You think he got a job with MSNBC? Do you think they cared that he announced his departure?
I think that was probably his final audition tape, but like, I don't know if it means he has a deal. Like,
he was like, hey, if I announce that I'm not running on your show, will you give me a job? So who is Ken Buck? Who was Ken Buck? You've heard what we had to say. Here's Kyle Clark of Nine News making many of the same points.
There may be no better example of how Republican politics in Colorado and in America have shifted than the case of Ken Buck. How a congressman went from the far right fringe of his party to being outflanked by an even fringier fringe that now mocks him as too middle of the road. Ken Buck is only middle of the road if you pave the shoulder and the ditch. Now, Ken Buck is popular on CNN and MSNBC these days because he calls out Republicans for election rigging lies. But remember, this is the same Ken Buck who called man-made global warming a hoax, compared homosexuality to alcoholism, backed a constitutional ban on abortion, state limits on some forms of birth control, all that. And Buck has been disowned by the Colorado Republican Party that he once led as chairman because Buck will not repeat Donald Trump's election lies. Yet, just last week, Buck helped to elect a House Speaker who played a key role in trying to overturn the election. If that sounds like a confusing contradiction, it is. This is probably a very confusing time to be Ken Buck. The man whose party tilted so far to the right, he fell off the map.
It's true that the Republican Party moved further to the right during Buck's time in office, but Buck was always on the right anyway.
It does make your fucking head spin, though. I mean, like, listening to that, like, list of positions and statements and actions, those are just a few. I mean, Ken Buck's been in office since 2012, right?
2014.
14. I mean, that's a decade in Congress, right? More or less.
Yeah.
Like, it's a long time. People change their minds, but they don't take every side of every issue throughout the course of one 10-year period without like doing a Kevin Priola and actually switching fucking parties. We're just like, all right, I'm actually not like that anymore. I'm over here voting for electric vehicles, voting for clean energy. Like, Priola's still like not super good with abortion rights and stuff, but like at least he's honest and consistent about that. And when the party went too far, he was like, I'm out. Peace.
There are two things I think I will remember Buck for. One is that during the first House impeachment hearings in the Judiciary Committee for Trump, Buck regularly didn't bother to show up. And I always thought that was weird.
Right.
Like, why wouldn't you?
Especially, he was the chair of the party at the time, wasn't he?
I don't. He might have been. Yeah.
He must have been.
I always thought it was weird. Like, you're on the House Judiciary Committee and you're just not going to impeachment hearings? That seems like kind of a big deal. And then the thing that he's done more of lately that really has bothered me, and I've mentioned this before, he always complains about the budget. He said one of the reasons he voted to oust Kevin McCarthy as speaker was because McCarthy took too long to pass a budget. Buck never voted for a budget in 9 years. So don't complain about that. You're not helping. You're not doing anything to assist in it.
It is a weird, like, it's a 10-year period of just head scratching stuff, right? Like, he was the Weld County DA, then he like ran for US Senate, lost to Bennett in like the best year for Republicans ever, probably in the rest of Colorado's history. 2010 will have been their best year, maybe 2014. And then like Cory Gardner runs for Senate, Buck wins the primary for his seat and has been there for the last 10 years. And like, to what end, right?
I was just sitting here thinking, what did Buck accomplish? I don't know.
Certainly got us talking about him.
Right. But I mean, like, can he look back and say, I did this? I helped pass this.
That's a great question.
I mean,
we've been talking about like Lauren Boebert's inability to pass actual laws for a long time. Like, I can't think of the Ken Buck law. I mean, he did a machi with Joe Neguse, right? Camp Amachi National Monument. That's a thing he did.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was like mostly because of Jonah Goose.
Yeah, that was the goose. But he, yeah. I don't know. I don't know what he's going to say he did. Not much.
Ken Buck, a confusing legacy.
I was there. that was about all I can say.
Ken Buck, one of the thousands.
So who's in? Who's out? Who do we expect in the 4th Congressional District?
Who's in? Who's out? Who gives a shit?
This field could be huge.
Yeah, this is bananas.
You can get on the ballot for the Republican primary two ways, of course. You can go through the caucus.
At least at the moment, who fucking knows what kind of rules are going to change between now and then? This is as of November 2023.
They may draw straws at some point. You have to go through the caucus process. And then if you get 30% at the Congressional District Caucus, you get onto the ballot, or you can petition your way on, and you only need 1,500 signatures in a congressional district, which is more than doable for a halfway competent campaign.
Yeah, I mean, like, the only like constraints there are they need to be like current residents and of the party you're seeking the nomination for. So you need to somehow find 1,500 registered Republicans in CD4.
Right. Not too
good
tough.
Good luck.
I think, you know, you'll get at least two people out of the assembly. Maybe three.
Yeah, you can get, you know, 30, 60, 90% total, and you know, couple 30 percenters,
you know, almost an unlimited number of people could petition on. The only problem becomes that the first person to turn in their signatures, then all those people that signed are then off the table for the next person. So you want to be first. It gets more complicated.
So you want to start doing this right now if you're any of the long ass list of people we're about to mention.
So definitely in at this point. Somebody named Justin Schreiber, somebody named Trent Lisey. All I know about him is he has that ridiculous MAGA King hat.
And to be clear, these are people who have announced their intention to run. None of these people have put in signatures. None of these people have qualified for the ballot yet. These are just like people who raised their hand.
Yeah, those two have filed paperwork, as has Deborah Flora.
Deborah Flora.
The first somewhat recognizable name to make it official.
Yeah, if you're a regular KNUS listener or an observer of one part of the U.S. Senate primary in 2022, you have heard her name before.
You might have remembered her 2 months as a candidate.
She was wasn't she Miss America flautist? Was that Miss Colorado?
She was Miss Colorado or something like that a long time ago.
And then she became angry mom for liberty type. And then she like tried to run for Senate. And then she got a radio show out of the deal. And here we are. That's Deborah.
I think she was on the radio first. I don't know. Here's Kyle Clark at 9 News explaining a little bit more about her announcement.
So the first Republican to get into the race for Ken Buck's seat since he decided to leave, she says she's focused on communists and terrorists. Talk radio host Deb Flora is best known for fighting what she calls the Marxist infiltration of our public schools. Flora founded the group Parents United America. She sits on the board of the conservative group Colorado Parent Advocacy Network, CPAN. Both those groups are self-described parental rights organizations that claim that schools are indoctrinating children through sex ed or lessons in critical race theory. Flora has called for parents in Colorado to pull all elementary and middle school age children out of the public school system.
Yeah,
she recently made a documentary linking teachers to communists.
My focus is on basically communists and terrorists, because that's what we need to fight back against and pull together for freedom.
That was her campaign announcement today on the radio. Flora ran for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate last year. She did not make the ballot.
All right. In case you missed it, let me play that gem from Deborah Flora one more time.
My focus is on basically communists and terrorists, because that's what we need to fight.
Nothing says I'm a super fucking serious candidate for Congress than giggling right before you mention communists and terrorists in your campaign announcement.
Yeah, I know that there's the budget and health care and Medicare and Social Security, but let's talk about communists and terrorists.
I just, like, for the fuck's sake.
But the thing is, this gives you an idea of how batshit crazy this primary is going to become.
Yeah, she is setting the tone. Like, here's the thing. That might sound crazy to us, and it does, but that will be a lot of the conversation in this primary.
It's insane, but that might happen. There's a long list of people who are probably in the race. Douglas County Commissioner Laura Thomas seems almost certain to go. Former State Senator Jerry Sonnenberg certainly seems likely from what he said. State Representative Richard Holtorf, you heard Marshall Zellinger mention that earlier, said that he was calling an emergency meeting of his exploratory committee.
The emergency meeting of my D&D club.
Which we laugh at this because there is no such thing as an exploratory committee.
And there's no such thing as an emergency meeting of your exploratory committee either.
What he means is he called a few people.
Yeah, he was like, oh, shit. Hey, kids, get in the living room. We have to have a family meeting.
But he's certainly running, I would think. I mean,
yeah, sure, why not?
We're still waiting to hear from people like George Brockler, who desperately wants to run. I don't know if he will.
I mean, like, he is certainly doomed to fail if he does. So let me know where to send the first check, George.
Ironically, he's not crazy enough probably for this primary.
Although the question is, like, will he prostrate himself to a degree where he attempts to appear crazy enough, because he wants power that much?
He may. Heidi Ginnall, the 2022 Republican candidate for governor, she seems like she's got one foot in from what she's been saying lately.
Because what this race needs, besides communists and terrorists, is litter boxes and conspiracy theories.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then there's former House Minority Leader Pat Neville. I would be kind of surprised if he didn't run, honestly. He's been waiting for this for a long time.
Lives in Dougco, grew a beard, like...
And Gino Campana, who also tried to run for Senate in 2022, also did not make the ballot.
You know, fun fact about Gino Campana trying to run for CD4?
What's that?
He lives in CD2. Fort Collins is in Joe Neguse's congressional district.
Of course, you know, that doesn't matter legally. You can run, but...
Yeah, you can.
This actually does make more sense to me for Campana than running for Senate did, because, I mean, he was a self-funder to a degree, but your money... And then this is true for Heidi Ginnall too. Your money goes a long way in a primary race with a bunch of candidates.
Absolutely. And he's going to be a self-funder like all these other yahoos getting each other's way. They each grabs 5%, 8%, whatever. He could spend enough to like make this a race for himself, right?
Right. So, I mean, the key is, at the end of the day, how many people have the ability to make the ballot? Because the more there are, obviously, the more you're slicing that pie of potential voters and getting down to the point where 15,000, 10,000 voters, even less, can get you a seat in Congress.
This is that Doug Lamborn math, right? This is that, like, 15,000 people 10 years ago made Doug Lamborn an unkillable zombie of Colorado politics.
Right. That's why Republicans are excited about this opening.
Yeah, because if you ever wanted to be in Congress in Colorado and you're a Republican who lives anywhere near the eastern side of the state, this is your one shot for a long time.
Yeah. And you win this primary, you're good.
I just love like how much Marshall believes in democracy, right? Yeah. Like, he's like, everyone should get a primary outside. People just have to prove it. Why the fuck not? It's like, all right, this is a guy who's never like sat in a party office. He's not wrong.
But I mean, as we talked about, like, that's not, if you're a political party, your goal is to win seats, not always fight for seats. Although the current Republican Party might have that goal.
Yeah, I mean, this might be Dave Williams' time to shine.
And he could, because remember, they changed their rules recently to allow the party apparatus to get involved in a Republican primary. Maybe Dave Williams tries to play kingmaker.
All right, let's test those fucking prognostication powers, buddy. Let's hear it. If you had to pick right now, and you can pick like two of the list of people we've discussed so far, who would Dave Williams try and put his thumb on the scale for?
Oh, that's hard, because I don't even know who likes Dave Williams anymore.
Yeah, well, everyone's going to start to pretend to real fast.
Right. I think that the MAGA King is like a friend of his. But I don't know.
Yeah, but like even Dave Williams knows that like leading with MAGA King is not like a great look.
I think Jerry Sonnenberg is the most likely winner here. I don't know what his relationship is with Williams.
I don't either. Jerry's like relatively beloved, right? Like former Republican state senator, like former state rep, has been around for a long time. Sterling, like I know his hometown. So like he's like a relevant dude. But I do wonder like if Jerry is like MAGA enough for the current Republican Party. It's kind of like an old school rural Republican.
And then I think it's, you're looking at somebody like Heidi Ganahl or Gino Campana simply because they don't have to worry about the money.
Yeah, but that required Dave Williams making like a strategic decision. Right.
I don't know who Dave Williams would pick. My early favorite is Sonnenberg. But again, once you get to a half dozen candidates or more, everything kind of goes out the window.
I'll put it on the record. I think Williams will, if he backs anybody, it'll be Holtorf. Yeah. Maybe he's part of the emergency kitchen cabinet.
Yeah, he's on the exploratory committee. All right, let's switch gears and talk about our eighth favorite member of Congress.
This is the Bo Burt Report.
Boebert, as we've been talking about, is in trouble. And the reason we know that and we can say it today is because that narrative has taken hold. The Associated Press, Colorado Public Radio have both done stories recently talking about her problems. A couple of consistent themes have emerged. Boebert is more concerned about clicks and performative politics than she is about getting anything done.
You fucking heard it first, y'all.
Yep. Plenty of evidence for that. Republicans are saying increasingly that they're worried she can't beat Adam Frisch in a general election, so they need to replace her first. And then the Beetlebert scandal keeps coming up as the breaking point for all these Republicans.
And it's not just that she got caught getting handsy in the theater, and it's not just that she was rude to a pregnant woman, and it's not just that she was like vaping and acting disorderly, although those things are very embarrassing. It's that she's a fucking hypocrite. And she put the lie to all the bullshit about these conservative traditional values, and she makes them all look like the liars that they are.
And she's embarrassing. Like, you don't want to be publicly supportive of someone like that.
Marjorie Taylor Greene never gets primary threats. Like, she's pretty fucking embarrassing. So, like, I'm just trying to figure out, like, where the line is here. She got caught being a hypocrite? Like,
public hand jobs? So
it's really just the over-the-pants dance. That's the problem.
Well, and I also saw something where former Republican Party Chair Dick Wadham said he thought the most damaging part was her saying, "Do you know who I am?" to staff.
That is such a thing. Like, yeah. Everyone thinks politicians act that way. And then when you get caught doing it. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's interesting also because, like, you know, we talked about this in the show before, but like the day the Beetlebert scandal broke, there was this sort of like whitewash attempt coming from Politico to like, well, you know, she might be a lunatic in Washington, but she's really trying right. hard to get the job done back home. And not so much.
Nobody remembers that now. Right. Another Republican county commissioner, meanwhile, has backed her opponent, Barbara Herd's husband. Ty Gates of Rio Blanco County told Ernest Lenning of the Gazette newspapers that he's, quote, not very pleased with Lauren, unquote.
So our Republican county commissioner tracker hits five, either unendorsers or Barbara Herd husband endorsers, right?
I believe so, yeah.
Because it's all three, Mesa, Suppis, and Delta, and now this fella, Ty Gates and Rio Blanco. Like, look, there's a kajillion counties in the third district. Each one of them has 3 to 5 commissioners. So, like, this is a long list of potentials. But every single time this happens is a story now. So prepare for the drumbeat.
And it kind of makes me wonder, feel like Herd might have a more of a campaign operation than we're seeing publicly. This feels like a drip kind of strategy.
Oh yeah. Well, it's both things, right? So like, what was it? We found out that Herd about one of the Suppis endorsement, like when the reporter called him to ask about it. So like either he's playing a really sly game or one of two things are happening at the same time. I think both are probably happening. There's probably the effort is underway because people are moving doing it in his columns. It's either him or surrogates. Bill Owens out there probably making some phone calls, right? Like some of the other kingmakers on the Western Slope, the Grand Junction folks are probably doing this sort of stuff. But also, like, we've been talking about this permission structure that gets created, right? And it's like suddenly you're not the only – if you're the first person, if you're Cody – what's his name? The guy who came out in Grand Junction, the first one. Cody Davis. I can't believe I didn't remember his last name. If you're Cody Davis and you're the first guy to jump, like, that takes some balls. Like, you got to be a little courageous for that, right? But, like, if you're number 27 to go from Boebert to Barbara Herd's husband, like, at that point, like, the floodgates are open and, like, they're going to keep coming through. So, like –
yeah, it eventually switches to the point where you don't want to be the one not doing
That's exactly right. This is a real problem. It's 1 year away. It's November 2023. By June or July, when this primary actually...
Well, it's less than that because we're looking at the, she's got a real primary.
By the time the primary rolls around, like half these county commissioners are going to be giving each other permission to jump ship. Like he might end up with a majority of them. That stuff matters in a district like this. It doesn't necessarily matter in sort of your front range, small one or two county districts, but in these large rural counties where these people actually have quite a lot of influence over the electorate, like, yeah.
And where people don't see Boebert,
right?
But they see these people.
Right.
We talked just a second ago about how hard it is to defend Boebert in light of all her scandals. There was one weird anecdote I wanted to mention from Colorado Public Radio. They talked to a guy named Tom Keenan, who is a regular at Boebert meetings and a church she apparently attends. He said that these commissioners and other Republican figures switching to her don't represent voter sentiment because they believe that the Beetlebert scandal was a setup meant to entrap her.
I mean, who gave her the vape pen? Like, where do you start with that? That's fucking crazy.
That's a lot of work to figure that out.
So I guess the conspiracy goes like this. Quinn Gallagher is a George Soros plant, a Democrat drag queen show bar owner who seduces Lauren Boebert, hides a camera in the Buell Theater, entices her to the right seat at a play where she knows the words to the songs. Ellipses, groping, vaping, touching, being rude, yelling at staff and pregnant women. Scandal goes national. That's the theory. Quinn Gallagher, if you can hear us, blink twice.
Another reason you know you're in trouble when your supporters have to do that.
That is the deepest state I have ever heard of in my entire life. This guy. But like, this is the thing. It's this whole entire idea that they can't possibly be liars and hypocrites. They can't possibly just be full of shit. There has to be some greater scheme afoot here. It's the same reason why you can continue to vote for fucking Donald Trump after 91 counts in 4 indictments and he takes the stand and he already gets judgments against him for being a fucking liar. It's that like victim mentality taken to like the unbelievable logical conclusion.
If this is true, I applaud you, sir, or woman, whoever. That is the greatest entrapment in the history of entrapment. You need to write a book about it if you did that on purpose. Let's talk about our third B from your intro, body armor, which is something I think should be banned. And you and I aren't in total agreement here, but I'll tell you why we're talking about it now. There was an incident in Glenwood Springs at an amusement park recently. A man was found dead there, apparently of a self-inflicted gunshot wound.
He was at like an amusement park with kids. Like he scrawled something on the wall that's like, "I'm not a killer," before he took his own life. Like this could have, there are every other universe is this goes horribly.
He was found with a rifle, pistol, ammunition, pipe bombs, and he was wearing black tactical clothing, which is, that's the part that really caught my attention, because there is no reason to own body armor, let alone to wear it, unless you are planning on doing something that might get you into a gun battle with law enforcement. Fortunately, I think this guy, you know, changed his mind and decided to shoot himself, but he got close. Data shows that the majority of mass shooters in the last decade have been committed by assailants wearing body armor. That includes the 2012 movie theater shooting in Aurora and the 2021 shooting at a King Supers in Boulder. The guy who killed 10 people in Buffalo in 2022 in that racially motivated attack, he was also wearing body armor. A security guard shot him. It didn't do anything. And then that guy shot and killed the guard.
Remember, the only thing that stops a bad guy with a gun is a good guy with the gun, unless the guy is covered in Kevlar head to toe. Wait a second.
Right. Body armor proponents say that this is a Second Amendment right, which is, of course, ludicrous.
That's absolutely preposterous. I'm sorry. Like, you and I aren't in total unanimity on this, but the Second Amendment doesn't say fucking jack shit about plate carriers.
No, it doesn't. It's also, the Second Amendment does not protect you, allow you to carry around like a giant knife either. Like, there's a lot of exceptions.
Here I am with my broadsword.
Body armor proponents will also try to argue that hunters need it, which I really don't get.
In case the deer shoots back?
Yeah, apparently there's armed
only
bears.
Only if you're hunting the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I guess. That's so stupid. New York banned body armor after the Buffalo shooting.
I didn't know that. They actually did, huh?
Yeah. California and Illinois have made recent efforts. It is federally illegal if you are convicted of a felony already. But I think Colorado should take up a broader ban in the next legislative session because, like I said, there's no reason to have body armor or to wear it unless you're trying to intimidate people or you're getting ready to commit some sort of heinous crime.
So here's like the straightest face case I can make in the other direction just to have the argument. So during the Elijah McClain, George Floyd protests in 2020, I know a lot of people who were wearing plate carriers or body armor or, you know, even just like improvised sort of like skateboard knee pads and stuff, because it wasn't that they were planning on necessarily committing like an act of mass violence. Is they were trying to protect their body against what was going to happen, which was police officers were going to use generally non-lethal, but unfortunately sometimes lethal weaponry against the crowd during crowd control. So I'm not saying this is a reason to have this stuff proliferate largely through society, but as a philosophy major, I can't just let a good counterexample go by.
I think there could be exceptions where you could apply for a bulletproof vest, you know, if you had a good reason to have one, but you can just buy this stuff for like $800,000 off the internet.
My last counterexample before we move on to another subject, which you absolutely should, is that, remember, friends of the show, Alec Garnett and Matt Gray,
right,
actually wore bulletproof vests to the Capitol during the Lebsock expulsion because they were actually, unfortunately, being threatened and had faced...
There are exceptions that I could be made in legislation, but broadly, I think this is silly. I wrote about this on Colorado Polls, and Taylor Rhodes, the executive director of the No Compromise gun group, Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, responded on the artist formerly known as Twitter by saying, quote, "As someone who is a frequent purchaser of body armor, I can assure you it is not $700.
How much do you fucking need? Wait a second. I missed that word frequent.
Right.
You're only one body, dude.
I don't know. He says even the cheap shit is double that cost. I'm not sure what the point of that is.
I guess he's proving your point.
Or he's saying, no, it's more expensive. It's not even that accessible.
Remember, this organization's stated policy goal is to eliminate restrictions on claymore mines, bazookas, and machine guns. So, like, I'm not certain that we should be taking his word for it on public safety policy.
No. No. Not at all. If they had their way, he'd be riding missiles around town. Some good news. Colorado will fully fund K-12 education in 2024 for the first time in 14 years.
That means no more negative factor, y'all.
This is a really big deal. It's a little complicated to explain because of that phrase, the negative factor. The story goes back to the 2010 legislative session coming out of the Great Recession. We were forced to make some awful budgetary decisions in order to not cut things like Medicaid or completely eliminate higher education funding. Lawmakers came up with a compromise. The best way I've come up with it for explaining this is they basically wrote a giant IOU for public education funding.
Yeah, that's a pretty good explanation. If you want to get one layer deeper, it has to do with the fact that there's this other thing in the Constitution that's not Tabor called Amendment 23. And what Amendment 23 does is it mandates an increase in education spending every year according to a formula. Unfortunately, that collides with the formula in Tabor that says the government has to spend less money every year, right?
Right.
So brilliantly, but tragically, the legislature figured out in the 2010 recession when revenue started falling through the floor that there is a way we can comply with Amendment 23 that the state Supreme Court actually upheld at some point and not actually spend the legally required amount of money on education, which is by creating this thing called the budget stabilization factor. And it is my fervent belief that the author of such thing wrote it on purpose to be shorthand as the BS factor so that you could basically do exactly what you're saying. Say, we're not giving the schools this much money, but we're writing this IOU.
But we will.
And the technical reason is because inside the school finance formula, there are these things called factors that increase generally spending to certain categories like special ed or ESL or some of these other categories like special rural education, buckets of financing, et cetera. And this was just another factor in the overall formula, except this one was negative. So that's how they kind of puzzled through it, which is like horribly brilliant logic, right?
There were lawmakers in 2010 who broke into tears when this was passed because they felt so awful about cutting education funding. Anyway, this will, if the legislature approves the budget proposed by Governor Jared Polis, which I'm sure they will, K-12 education will be fully funded again for the first time in 14 years. There's still a ways to go for schools because they're still only going to be funded at levels set more than a decade ago, but at least we're not in the red. So good news.
But don't worry. I mean, the second we hit a recession, this progress may be
We're still
reversed.
On good news, Ian.
Oh, sorry. Yeah.
Good news.
Good news.
Okay. Let's do some quicker hits and then we'll get out of here. Marjorie Taylor Greene, the Georgia Republican, is hopping mad that Republicans didn't universally support her effort to censure Democratic Representative Rashida Tlaib. Green went after, lots of Republicans, saying that, quote, you voted to kick me out of the Freedom Caucus, but keep CNN wannabe Ken Buck and vaping, groping Lauren Boebert.
Hell yeah. All right, that's like two for two Colorado attacks, though. Come on.
She even called Texas Representative Chip Roy Colonel Sanders, which I thought that's pretty funny.
That's a 7 out of 10 insult, yeah.
Yeah. But again, these are very serious people.
Who definitely should be in the lawmaking business.
Ron DeSantis, that governor from Florida who's not going to be president. He's got a boot problem.
He's got a big old boot problem.
We've talked about it before, how he clearly wears boots that have inserts in them to make him look taller. There's a clip from a show called the PDB podcast with Patrick Bet David that is a riot. Listen to this.
I know you were on Bill Maher, and Bill Maher talked about the boots. I've seen you walk with these boots. Go ahead and play this clip. This on TikTok went viral. It doesn't have a million views. It doesn't have 10 million views. This thing's got 1.2 million likes. And some people are wondering,
What are they? I don't even understand. I haven't seen that.
They have not shown this to you. Okay. No. What they're trying to say with this is that in your boots, you have heels.
No. Those are just standard off the rack. Lucchese.
How tall are you? How tall are you, Governor?
5'11".
5'11"? Okay. Why don't you wear tennis shoes and dress shoes?
I do wear tennis shoes when I work out. Yeah.
100%. You do? Yep. Okay.
He says he's 5'11". Give me a break.
I'm not a tall man. But get the fuck out of here.
And Donald Trump is 215 pounds. Sure.
Yeah, right.
This has gotten a lot of press lately, including a Politico report with actual cobblers as sources. I swear to God. I love that Ron DeSantis is just getting grilled for being short. That's pretty funny.
He's getting clobbered by cobblers.
Clobbered by cobblers. Absolutely. And finally, our gibberish of the week, we go to Fox News and Jesse Waters, who apparently is dispensed with even pretending to be a journalist.
Do you remember before the run-up to the Ukraine war where U.S. intelligence said, hey, Russia, we see you guys amassing hundreds of thousands of men on the border of Ukraine. Mm-hmm. We have communications intercepts. We have satellite imagery. We see what you're doing. You're saying we don't see the whole Western Hemisphere coming up in caravans through Central America into Mexico, right into Texas? Dana, of course we see it. We see exactly what they're doing, and we don't do anything about it. We had a former CIA guy come on primetime the other day, and he said the CIA makes money on the side with drug trafficking. It's like a side hustle because their funding isn't big enough. So they do some, you know, black ops in order to boost their budget and hide it from congressional oversight, mm-hmm. and then use it for dirty stuff. So that's what they're doing with the drug trafficking. And one of the reasons, one of many reasons Donald Trump was defeated was because the CIA had had it with this guy because he was threatening the cash flow, that and the China tariffs, among many other things. So when you threaten the donor money and you threaten the Democrat voters and you threaten the CIA cash flow, it's a problem. Joe Biden is such an agreeable empty suit. He's just letting it all happen.
Wait, you're saying the CIA is funding itself by the drug trade?
Yeah, they take a cut. That's what the former CIA guy told me.
That's former White House Press Secretary Dana Perino, who asked a question at the end. I don't know how this is news or why this is on television. It's nonsense.
It's full fucking news, Max.
All right, that's it for us this week.
To Get More Smarter podcast is a production of ColoradoPulse.com and The Bighorn Company. Your hosts are me, Ian Silveri, and America's dad,
Jason Bain,
who chops and screws this thing. The phenomenal Breakmaster Cylinder made the theme song. Wear your seatbelt, get your booster rooster. Subscribe on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcast. Rate the show and leave us a review on the Apple Podcast app if you got more smarter. It helps a lot. Find us at GetMoreSmarter.com, where you can sign up for bonus content in our Substack. And please send all angry and non-angry rants to angryrants@GetMoreSmarter.com. We're going to have some more listener mail for you next week. Thanks to all who have written in, and we'll see you next time.
I got to ask that when I was in Colorado Springs, the main anchor at the time, oh my gosh, John Carroll, Kelly Schultz. She asked me that same question. No, it was a fill-in. It was Hank Brown's daughter. Anyways, it was, which is it, Zellinger or Zellinger? And I'm like, Gur, like a tiger. And she's like, so which is it?
Who's in, who's out, who gives a shit?
Oh, it's a grievance session.
You know how we do.
Suckable.
Free drinks tonight.